Today, I sit down with Jess Rutherford, the General Manager of Software Engineering at Aussie Broadband. Now, Jess and I have such an incredible conversation today, and I am so glad that you get to listen in to what we discussed. We talked everything from AI's impact on the future of work to what it takes to be a strong leader in a male-dominated space. We also discuss a topic that I'm really passionate about, which is why women are actually leaving technology and what needs to change in order to build truly inclusive workplaces. Some of the key questions I asked Jess is AI really taking our jobs, or is it a tool for building super employees? Why do women enter the tech industry but leave at a higher rate? And what's the difference between being good with people and just being nice? So strap in, today's episode is full of aha moments, little nuggets of gold and wisdom. So I really hope that you enjoyed today's episode. And if you could do me one thing before you listen, please just leave a review or a comment, because it all helps to boost this podcast. So enjoy today's episode. Jess, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I'm really excited to jump into this conversation. You've had a really fantastic career journey, actually purely in tech, which is going to be quite interesting as well, because a lot of the women I speak to, they've transitioned into technology. So I'm really curious. I love to sort of have different stories and different views. So Jess, first and foremost, give the audience a bit of an intro into who you are and what got you interested, first and foremost, in tech in the first place. Let's start there.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me, Georgie. It is really great to be here, so thank you. What got me interested in tech? So really, I was quite lucky. I had two fantastic role models as women in tech, that being my mother and my auntie. They were both quite senior women in tech, and they really progressed their career very quickly with a lot of confidence. And so, and I was really excited by that. And I had no idea that women in tech were quite a rare species, certainly at the time when I went to uni. It didn't occur to me because I had such wonderful role models in my auntie and my mother. I just thought it was very normal. And I went to a girls' school and studied technology at high school, and there was a big cohort of girls studying tech when I did it. So it really wasn't until I went to my first day at university and I sat in a lecture theatre and kind of looked around me and went, oh, wow, there's not many women here. And it was the first moment that it dawned on me that women in tech weren't such a common thing. So, I was always interested in tech because I had family connections in tech, and was always really intrigued in how tech can make everyday things that we do faster or better or easier. So that's what really attracted me into tech.
Well, your story is very unique. Because I also just want to just point out something which is really interesting. So your mum and your auntie were in technology. There was even fewer women back then in tech. I mean, what year would that have been, out of curiosity?
Well, that's a good question. So, I mean, both of them would have moved into tech in that early 80s, late 70s, early 80s it would have been. Yeah, they were movers and shakers, being quite unique. My mum started, she was more supporting, my father was a developer and he freelanced, and so my mum was started with supporting him in his job. But then, you know, she realised that she was a natural for it too. So she, you know, developed her own sort of career in tech, where my auntie, she was in banking and big corporate techs from uni. So yeah, both of them in tech right from the get-go.
Very, very impressive. And God, I bet they've seen quite a lot of change over the years.
And they do love to trot out the, well, you know, back when I was, you know,
yeah,
trying to get into tech stories. But yeah, they've seen a lot of change.
Yeah. I mean, God, even in my lifetime as well, like, you know, see, we're sort of similar, but I mean, I remember dial up. I remember the computer. I remember like the first time I saw a computer in my school and we all had like an allocated slot in the primary school. And I was just so amazed because when I typed something in, it would say the word back. And I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. Yeah.
And look, and I was really privileged as a kid, honestly, in high school. We had an internet connection at home. We, you know, I was able to use ICQ and various bulletin boards. So, you know, I had a lot of that tech influence in my family, like right from a very early age. So it was kind of always very normal to me.
Well, it certainly wasn't normal in my life because I remember having constant arguments with my dad. Get off. I need to use the phone. I don't want to use dial up. And then in school, I mean, God, I think I was learning how to, two skills I've never learned, I've never used in my life, bake a cake. And also I can't bake, honestly, even to these days. I don't even really cook. And also sewing. Oh my God, you should have seen what I did. I mean, it was just laughable, really. We had to sew a pillow. So I could barely sew a button on now. So if I had been maybe pushed into technology, I could have actually been very good. I feel like my skills could have been more aligned to that because I've always been, you know, quite interested in tech myself, hence why I probably went into tech recruitment. But you do make a really valid point, Jess, and it's a point I constantly make, is that we can't be what we can't see, right? Which is why I do fundamentally believe visibility matters so much. You also mentioned a really interesting word that your auntie and your mum both had, confidence. Can we dive into this? Because I think that would have naturally kind of like rubbed off on you as a younger woman. So what impact did that have on your life and your decisions, Jess?
Yeah, look, they are both very confident women, and I am lucky to have that as a role model. And, you know, probably some of that has rubbed off. That's probably true. I think they were both empowered by their family when they were growing up as to not let barriers be in the way for what you want to do. They had, you know, father and brothers who were very supportive in them reaching their goals and their aspirations. And they really, I think, they took their career into their own hands. You know, as I mentioned, my mother started out by supporting my father in his job, and, you know, she was looking after the books and the admin kind of the business. But she realized pretty quickly, actually, this development thing, I can probably do that too. I can actually build my own professional skills in tech as well. Which my dad was supportive of, and so she did it. And I think, you know, they were lucky in that they had the right support network around them to really support them in their goals and their dreams, you know, and they didn't have necessarily that role model that they could see where I have, but they pushed through anyway, and I'm constantly in awe of them doing that because I've certainly had that leg up, being, you know, that 20, 25 years later in time. There have been more role models that I've been able to see that they would have had.
Still not quite enough though, is there? So we still
need to
fix that. But I want to go back to your university days. I can just imagine, you know, this young, confident Jess, she's been around all these amazing women in tech. Day one of uni, she rocks up at the lecture and she's like, oh, I'm the only woman here. How did you navigate that experience and moving forward? Because I'm sure that hasn't just been in your uni experience. It's probably been out through your whole corporate career. So can we talk about how you've had to go navigating very male-dominated environments and what you've learned from that experience?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And I do remember, it must have been in my first week at uni when this kind of revelation happened to me, like, oh my goodness, where are all the women? And I went and had this rather frank conversation with my mum and my auntie, and they were like, oh, yeah, well, we didn't think we'd tell you that. We wanted you to find that out on your own. And, you know, some of it has been finding out for myself, as it would be for anyone else, finding out how navigating that world is going to work for you, because it is different for everyone, right? For me, there has been moments in my career where I have felt quite alone as the only woman in the room. And then there's times in my career where I have felt incredibly supported by large networks of wonderful men around me. And you know, sometimes you move through life and move through your career having those different moments and taking the opportunity to learn from them. It's not always smooth sailing. It's definitely not. But being able to reflect back and think about, well, how did you get through that? Or what could you have done differently? Or how could you have navigated that differently? Will ultimately help the next interaction as well. So it's a constant journey. But finding some of those men who are really supportive and really help elevate you, I found those real allies. And there's lots of fabulous allies out there. So surrounding yourself with the support and care from them, I have found to be really, really useful. And also tapping into that network of amazing women and learning from them constantly as well.
Yeah, I think that's just such solid advice. And we need our male allies as well. We can't just rely on other, you know, women as well. We need to have the sponsors within the business. I'm curious, Jess, as you sort of evolved throughout your career, you've continued to step up, right? So if you sort of reflect back on that sort of career timeline from like day one of a corporate role to where you are now, which is like the GM of technology, Aussie Broadband, which is just such a big role and a very well-known brand and a company. What would you sort of say if you could pinpoint some sort of key moments that you feel have led to this sort of continuous, or maybe sideways in some instances, but this growth that you've had over the timeline of your career? Could you pinpoint some things that you think you look back and go, yep, I did that. That's why that happened. And just maybe some moments that you go, that's why I am where I am today.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I think one of the really great things that set my career up really well from early on was straight out of uni, I actually went straight into consulting. And consulting was fabulous because it meant that I moved around quite a bit and went to quite a number of different client sites in a number of different teams, different companies, sometimes doing different roles. And it gave me a lot of very varied experience quite quickly. So that I think was a key moment in my career where I got a real breadth of experience quite quickly. And that set me up in a few ways. It set me up in terms of understanding how different teams operate and how different roles within a team work together. So I got a lot of that experience quite quickly. It also meant I built a network quite quickly too. I met a lot of people, a lot of different people in different industries quite quickly as well. And it also really helped with my confidence, I think, because I was having to move into new teams, new environments, and having to learn and adapt and be a contributing member of that team quite quickly. So I think that was a really career-defining moment for me when I got a lot of that experience quite quickly. But then there was also one time where I took quite a leap of faith, actually. So what I'm doing now is I'm general manager of software engineering. So I look after a large team of developers. Whereas earlier in my career, I'd had more generalist roles in tech, in business analysis roles and project management roles. And I actually left a large corporate that I'd been with for nearly 10 years. And I moved to a very small company who built online software for the not-for-profit community. So it was a stark difference moving from a large corporate to a small organization, a social enterprise in effect. And it was a very big change, and it was a very big change in role. So it was quite a leap of faith, but I'm so glad that I did it because it got me actually back more into the roots of tech, which I really enjoyed, and closer to the people actually delivering those solutions and outcomes. So that was another real time in my career where I guess I took quite a leap of faith, and it worked out really well for me.
Very, very good. And I think, you know, it's interesting, you're not the only one that said consulting. Interestingly, I was actually having a conversation with Anna Clive, who I know you've worked with, and she was on the podcast a few weeks ago, and she started in consulting as well in Deloitte. So I think it seems to be quite a good grounding for people, because I can imagine, you know, you're dealing with difficult stakeholders, you're having to work in a team, how to think on your feet, and it's a very professional environment, high stakes. So I think it seems to be a little bit of a pattern emerging. So it's just interesting. I try and identify, okay, why did that, why is that a good foundation? Why was that a good sort of first point? But the other thing I want to sort of talk about now, you've obviously mentioned you're the GM of software engineering at Aussie Broadband. How did that role come about? So talk to me about how you got that opportunity, because that's a really big role. You're now managing a team of people, which I also want to dive into. But how did you acquire that role?
So it's actually not the role I went into at Aussie. So one of the things for me in my career more recently has been that it's really important for me who I work for and the companies that I work for, and that the company's values align with my own. And that's something that I'm very passionate about, and it's something that I really won't compromise on. It's really important to me to love the company that I work for. And I actually decided that Aussie Broadband was one of those companies that looked pretty awesome, and I really wanted to go and work there. And I hadn't worked out exactly what role I was going to do there. But I knew that I wanted to work there. And so I was starting to look at what job opportunities there were, and there was nothing being advertised that really fit my skill set. And I knew some people who worked at the company. So I started having conversations with them about what opportunities there might be, and where I was at in my career, and what some of my skills and experience had been. And I really started talking with them to understand what might be on the horizon at Aussie Broadband, what might suit me. So there wasn't a role advertised, but what they did determine is that I could be really helpful for them in their transformation. They had recently made an acquisition with of another company who was based in Brisbane, another tech company. And they basically crafted a role for me that would be leading the integration of the transformation, the bringing together of the tech for those two companies. And so the first role that I started with at Aussie Broadband was the General Manager of Tech Transformation, which was really about integrating Aussie Broadband and Over the Wire.
There's some really interesting points in here. Right. The first one, you know your values. This is absolutely key. I want everyone to listen to this. Because you knew your values, you then were able to seek some clarity around what kind of organization you wanted to work for. Then you took the next step, which I talk about a lot, is you actually reached out and took action, and you met some people in the organization and got your name into the business. And then an opportunity was created. I think it's really important for people to understand this, because I think sometimes people get confused as like, oh, well, why is Jess where she is? How has she done it? Well, this is exactly how Jess has done it. These opportunities sometimes don't come knocking on our door. We have to go in search of them. And I think the first thing we need to do is get clear on our values, who we are, what we want. And from that clarity, then we can start taking the necessary steps. So I just want to applaud you, Jess, because again, I'm always trying to seek. I believe I have a saying, success leaves clues, and I'm trying to seek, why do they go on to achieve amazing things in their career and other people feel they get stuck? And I think this sort of timeline, this sort of example is perfect proof. So yeah, well done.
Now you've
got this team, right? And you know, leadership's not for everyone. Leadership is tough. Managing people, it's a lot. How do you lead, Jess? How have you gone about, especially a team of developers, lots of different personalities. So what kind of leader would you say you are, and how was that sort of transition happened, and how have you evolved as a leader over that time as well?
Look, I think transitioning into leadership has been really interesting, and you know, and it has ups and downs. There's no doubt about that. But the thing that's really important to me as a leader is really listening and understanding and seeking to understand my team. And if I can really understand what excites them, what challenges them, what motivates them, then I can really serve them as a great leader in bringing them and helping them to achieve the things that I know that they want to achieve. So whatever I can do to support my team is really always my focus, because a team who is well supported by their leader, they're able to achieve great things.
Completely agree. I completely agree with that. And I think this word empathy gets talked about a lot in leadership. But I also think that I think sometimes from speaking to lots of leaders and people in management roles, what they find challenging, and I put my hand up and say, I found this really challenging as well, is having these candid conversations. I really do care about people, and I feel like sometimes I don't want to have this conversation. I feel really awkward about it. I don't want to hurt their feelings. But actually, I'm doing them a disservice by not having the conversation and not pointing out this isn't good enough, or this isn't up to scratch, or what's happening, is something going on? Like, so how do you navigate that piece, Jess? Because I think it's really easy to, obviously, when everything's going well in a team and in a business, but when things get tough, how have you gone about having those difficult conversations, and any advice for those leaders that are having them at the moment? Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, this is actually something that really attracted me to Aussie Broadband, because one of their core values is be good to people. And with that comes an acknowledgement that being good to people is actually different to being nice to people. Because sometimes we need to have those tough conversations. And we always need to have those tough conversations with the utmost of respect and empathy. But sometimes that is different to being nice. We need to be good to people. So that was something that really attracted me to Aussie, and the difference between that and the subtlety there. In terms of having those difficult conversations with people or through tough times, it's never easy. And I think giving yourself the time and space to consider and think about how you're going to approach that conversation is absolutely critical. You don't want to go rushed into one of these conversations. You really want to think about, how am I going to approach this? How is the other person likely to feel? And how can I support them while I'm giving them this message that I have to give them? I think one of the real foundations or things that can underpin these difficult conversations being easier is to have a good relationship with people first. Having a difficult conversation off the back of a strong relationship is always going to be somewhat less difficult than having a difficult conversation with someone that you haven't got that grounding with first. So always trying to have that relationship, have that connection with people, and to really think about how is the message going to be heard or felt by them, and to take that into account when you're planning how to go about the conversation.
Yeah, that's just such solid advice. And I was thinking as you were speaking then about how important that whole respect piece is. Because I think this is the other thing that maybe where people fall down is, just because someone's in a leadership role, a management role, doesn't automatically grant them respect. So in your opinion, and what you've sort of been through in your time at Aussie and leading teams, how important do you think that piece is? And how do you go about gaining the respect of your team, Jess, personally?
Yeah, look, I think My approach to gaining respect within a team really is, there's a few components. Firstly, allowing yourself to be vulnerable with the team. So admitting when you don't know something, or admitting what isn't your forte, and seeking the guidance or the input from your team who maybe do have that information. So allowing yourself to show that vulnerability, I think, is really helpful with building that trust in the team. But then also to really be a solid and empathetic listener. And if you're really listening and your team are really feeling like they're being heard, then you're going to build more trust with them.
I completely agree. And another thing I say is I think the biggest gift you can give people is your full attention. And people know when you're not giving it. You know, if you pick up your phone or you're just like, your eyes are scattering all over the place. I think in today's world where we're so distracted, that whole giving people your undivided attention is such a skill. So I absolutely think that's such solid advice. I want to talk to you now. I can't possibly have you on the podcast, Jess, someone that's worked in tech their entire career and not talk about what's coming, right? Like AI, the future, like quantum computing. I mean, it is hard to not log on to YouTube podcasting and see the word AI, LinkedIn. It's everywhere at the moment. What's your take on it? Like, do you think it's going to disrupt our future as much what people are predicting? What are you thinking and feeling around this whole AI future tech piece right now?
Yeah, look, I've been to a few conferences over the last year or two, and it's almost become a running thing of how many minutes in can we go before AI is mentioned. AI is the hot topic. There is no denying it. It's on the top of everyone's mind. Everyone's thinking about it. Everyone wants to know where it's going. So it's absolutely a hot topic. I guess what we have to think about is how much of that is buzz and how much of that can we really make solid value from? And there is no doubt in my mind that there is real solid value to be had from AI. I think there is still, in a lot of teams, there is still fear around AI, and we need to be really careful about how we approach that fear. There could be fear in teams from AI taking jobs. And now I don't believe that AI is going to take jobs, but there is a potential that people who know how to leverage and use AI will take jobs. So I think people need to be realistic about that. And the more that people can learn to embrace and how to use for their own value AI, the better stead that they'll be. I think people are also fearful with AI in what information are we giving to these bots, and then what are they going to do with it? And, you know, we've all watched the movies, and, you know, we want to be careful. And, you know, privacy is absolutely top of mind. So we have to be really careful around what we're sharing with AI. So that is a really key thing for organizations to think about. How can they be creating these secure environments where it's safe to play with AI and to experiment and to see what might be useful? I think there's a lot of great applications out there for where we could be using AIs to almost make super employees, right? Help our employees be even better, even faster at what they do. And we need to be looking for those little nuggets or those opportunities for AI to support our workforce. I don't think we're there yet where AI is going to take over. I think we need to be really looking at how we can leverage AI to support us.
I'm curious, and maybe you're using it or not using it, but how are you personally utilizing AI to maybe make yourself more productive? Are you experimenting with a few things right now? Because, I mean, if I had your skill set, Jess, I'm not going to lie, I'd probably be just like, I don't know, coding all day or night, just like playing around with it. But I'm just like, you know, meanwhile, I'm just using ChatGPT to write me stories and stuff. But, you know, if I was a proper developer, I would be like, oh, this is really interesting. So how are you using it at the moment from a personal standpoint or a business standpoint? Any sort of insights there?
Yeah, look, I use ChatGPT every now and then to help me to articulate or strengthen or make better sense of some of my thoughts. Sometimes my thoughts could be a bit rambly, a bit scattery, and sometimes I can use ChatGPT to help structure those in a way that might communicate better. So I've certainly used it for that. I use AI for some fun things too, like, you know, if you're playing games with the kids or those sorts of things. AI can be quite fun. In terms of my daily work, though, I'm limited in how much I'm using AI at the moment for various reasons. I think we've still got to work out exactly as an organisation, as a workforce, how we use AI really productively and safely. But some of those more general applications, like, you know, help me construct this paragraph in a more coherent manner, it can be really useful.
I honestly just like use it as my little, like the phrase gets thrown about, but my co-pilot now, you know, like it helps me write sales copy. It helps me with, you know, even prepping for podcasts. Like the other day, you know, I just said, look, I'm interviewing this person. This is what they do. Could you give me a couple of questions that would be good to ask? I thought I'll just throw it in there, see what happens. Sure. The questions it gave me were phenomenal. I was like, wow, okay. Like, I hadn't really thought about that. So just, I think if we can use it as our co-pilot, if we can use it to just make us more productive, to speed things up a bit, fantastic. Like, I think you can always tell, like sometimes you can just tell when something's been written by AI. Like, I don't recommend it for like cover letters or using it for like, you know, because obviously we're all going to sound the same and it's going to be hard to distinguish what's right from wrong. But the one thing that I am really sort of concerned about right now is the whole deep fake thing. I think that's going to be very interesting over the next couple of years. And that's where I see blockchain technology coming into play, because if we can then validate and confirm on the blockchain, no, this is right, this is wrong. So I feel like blockchain and AI will both have their place. I feel like it is the internet 3.0. And it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens, I guess. But I just want every single person that listens to this podcast to be ready. I don't want people to bury their heads in the sand. The tidal wave's coming. They ignore it. And one day they wake up and think, oh, my job's gone. Or so, you know, I want people to be ready. It's coming, whether we like it or not. It's here. It's arrived. How can we utilize this? And like you say, it's not going to be AI taking jobs. It's people utilizing AI. They're the threats for us right now.
I think so, yeah. And look, you know, as you're talking then, I just remembered too that I tend to use AI more for helping me generate questions than generating answers, because I think AI can be great at provoking thought but not giving us thoughts. So I will sometimes use AI to help me come up with a set of questions. I typed into ChatGPT just this morning, actually. I'm doing a current state analysis. What are some questions that I should consider? And it gave me a really great bunch of questions that I can then just go into a workshop with as some starting points, some conversation starters. So ChatGPT is not giving me the answers, but it's giving me some of the prompters for me to then go and get the answers.
It's so good. I love it. I think it's fantastic. And I just hope that, you know, it doesn't turn out to be Terminator or something like iRobot. So we're just, you know, crossing my fingers that it doesn't want to blow us up one day. But for now, you know, it's definitely a good tool, and may that continue. But look, I can't, again, I have you on the podcast, Jess, and as a female in tech, I just want to ask you this question, because I think it's just something we're both very passionate. In your opinion, how are we going to bring more females into this industry? If you've got any thoughts, if you've got any ideas of like what you're seeing is working well, what you feel we could be doing more of, curious to sort of pick your brain on that.
Yeah. So look, twofold. I think we absolutely need to get more women into tech for sure. And I think a lot of that needs to come right back to university and even to high school and to pitching to young girls that moving into tech is a really viable option. You know, my story, I always saw it as a completely viable option, but there are plenty of girls out there who do not see tech as a completely viable option for them. They see it as a male-dominated industry, and that could sometimes turn them off tech as an idea right from that early age. So I think there's a lot of work to be done in schools and universities, but probably more so schools, to really paint tech as a very viable option to girls. So I think that's the first thing. But then I think the other thing is really to acknowledge that I was really interested in some statistics that came out of the last WGEA surveys, that there's actually less of a gap in terms of men and women coming into tech as what you might think. But what we're actually seeing is a lot of loss of women from tech in those first few years in their career. That seems to actually be the bigger driver in what we're seeing, which is fewer women in tech. There are considerably more entering tech, but considerably more leaving tech early in their career. And to me, that's a real worry, because why are women leaving tech? Is it because they're not feeling supported, they're not feeling valued, they're not feeling like they belong? Why is it? And I think there's a lot of complexity there to unpack. Sometimes it will be women who are wanting to start a family. And this is where I think organisations have a huge part to play in really supporting their women and providing excellent parental to leave options for women to be able to return to that career when it's right for them. And there are some organisations that are doing some absolutely fabulous things for supporting women on parental leave. And there are some companies that, you know, probably need to think about what they want to be doing to retain women in tech. But, yeah, I really think it's twofold. It's looking at what we can do to retain women in tech careers and also how we can get more in.
You are so right. And it is shocking because we do need to retain them. And I think also the frustration is that tech is a really good career choice for women who have got young families, because it can be done remote. You don't need to be in the office 5 days a week. You can log on first thing in the morning and work sort of not a 9 to 5. Like, tech isn't a 9 to 5 job. You're not sort of a service-based industry on the phone to candidates and clients all day like recruitment is. It can be done in the hours, you know, in between school drop-off, school pickup. Like, there's so much flexibility with tech. So it is actually a really fantastic career choice. Plus, on top of that, it's well paid. It's a lot more better paid. And there's a massive issue in our society where the rate of homelessness is now women between the ages of, like, you know, 50 and 60, because they took time off to raise their families. They didn't get paid any superannuation. Maybe they've had a broken marriage and now they find themselves homeless. So all of these systemic issues that we have in our society, actually, if you're so right, if companies basically had better parental policies in place, paid them the superannuation whilst they're on maternity, which I think now has actually been implemented, paid them fairly so there wasn't this big gender pay gap, because I think that's what's annoying a lot of women. Hang on a minute, why am I not being paid as much as Bob when I'm doing the exactly same job? And in tech, you can't argue that.
That's right.
Bob's coding. We're both doing the same job here. I should be paid equal. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And look, and I also think it's important to acknowledge too that we need to provide better support for men in the workforce to provide what some of historically has been more women's jobs in the home. I love it when, you know, I'm in a meeting and a man will say, sorry, I'm just going to run and do the school pickup. And I think, excellent. Yeah. We need more men doing school pickup. We need more men who are, you know, doing the bottle feeding and the nappy changing and normalizing and removing that gender bias as to, you know, which parent needs to be doing some of these jobs. So the more that we can support our male workforce as well to go on parental leave and to take that flexibility to support their family, I think that will indirectly help women a lot as well.
Absolutely. Shared responsibility. Like, I had a situation the other day with a candidate and he said to me, look, I really want this job, but first and foremost, I just need to speak to my wife, because it was a job that he had to be in the office 3 days a week. It was a big project. He said, at the moment, I'm actually doing school drop-offs and pick-up, and I just want to make sure that this is going to work with our family dynamic. And I was like, absolutely not a problem. Please go and have that conversation. But I thought, how amazing that he's having this conversation, he's ensuring that this can actually work with his family. I thought that is so, I didn't get that 10 years ago when I started my career.
That's right.
Whereas
absolutely.
Now, so we are slowly making change, Jess, which is really good to see. But look, we've spoken so much about a few really key issues on this podcast, and I'm just so passionate about everything. But the one thing I want to close off with is this whole idea of transferable skills, because I do think that there's this portion of women that I'm speaking to, and men as well, that are looking for a career change, looking for a career pivot. In fact, one of my best friends, she wants to transition into tech. She's like an account manager for this big enterprise company. She deals with a lot of difficult stakeholders every day. I was like, oh God, you're perfect. You know, like, yeah, that's pretty much all it is. Well, not really, but so how can, what do you think is a few really good transferable skills that could translate really well into the technology sector? It doesn't necessarily have to be with coding. It could be, but just a few skills that you go, these are just some key things that work really well in tech and are really needed.
Look, I think one of the biggest ones is actually problem solving. And ultimately, that's the biggest part of what tech is, really. It's all about solving problems. And solving problems, I think, requires a few skills. Firstly, it requires the skill to understand the problem, and that is an incredibly transferable skill. But then also taking the understanding of that problem and brainstorming different ways, and the creativity involved in that, in coming up with the different ways of solving that problem. And I think actually that's probably the most transferable skill into tech. A good gateway or a good entry path into tech roles can sometimes be through business analysis. Business analysis is quite a craft. It's a craft that can be learnt. The skills required to be a great BA can be learnt at any point in your career. But some of that domain knowledge that you may bring from a previous role could really accelerate you into being quite a fantastic BA relatively quickly. So if you're coming from a finance background or from an HR background, you will bring a whole host of domain experience from those previous roles, which you then, once you learn those BA skills or the craft of being a BA, that domain knowledge will help you tremendously in a really solid tech career.
Fantastic advice. Jess, I have absolutely loved this conversation. Where can I send people who want to connect with you, find out more about what you do? Where do you hang out the most?
Look, I'm on LinkedIn. Jessica Rutherford on LinkedIn is probably a good place to get me, and through your network as well.
Through the Sisterhood Club. Well, Jess, thank you. It's been an absolute honour, and I look forward to having many more conversations with you online and offline as well. So Jess, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thank you so much for doing that, and I can't wait to share the next episode with you.